Welcome to the Mentors Project podcast, covering mentorship, books, and more. In this podcast, we interview the authors of a series of books where we meet the men and women who mentored Western civilization. This is Dr. Roseanne Welch. For more information, visit mentorsproject.org. Our guest today is Margaret O'Reilly, the author of Sinner, Servant, Saint, a novel based on the life of St. Francis of Assisi. The patron saint of Italy, he is best known as the patron saint of animals and the natural environment, which makes his life ever so relevant to us today. So that's my first question, Margaret. Why does St. Francis matter to us today?
Well, that's so interesting, Roseanne. I think his message is critical for us today. It's interesting. He is an interesting character because he had a troubled youth, just like a lot of people today, and like people in every era. In fact, I'm sure that a lot of his stories sound familiar to many of us. He hated school. He hated the discipline of a rigid work schedule. He thought his job was boring and unimportant. He was restless as a youth, and he wanted to be free to do whatever he wanted to do. But he saw no purpose in his life. His parents were frequently upset with him. His brother was unsympathetic and often just plain mean. Francis was always popular with other people because he was charming, and he really did like people. But he felt that all of that was superficial, and he felt empty, and he felt lonely. To Francis, life seemed meaningless. But after a lot of struggling and almost despairing, he finally discovered the answer to his pain and disillusionment. His confusion was cleared up, and he was so relieved and so happy that he wanted to share the cause of his joy with everyone, precisely because he knew that this realization was important for everyone and not just for himself. He wanted to tell everyone what he had learned because he knew that it was the way out of sin and out of doubt and the way to true happiness. So I think that's something that people in every era can appreciate and benefit from. Francis found that the solution to the puzzle that had so perplexed him in his life was that God loved him. That God loved him so much that he was willing to suffer and to die for him. And not only for him, but for every one of us. After that, Francis was so in love with Christ that all he wanted to do with his life was to be a second Christ in the world. And that gave his life meaning. So his message wasn't meant, you know, for a limited or specific audience, even though he could only address the people that he knew and he lived with. But he realized that this message was for everyone. So he sent his friars out all over the world. He really wanted to meet the Sultan of Egypt because he thought that could make a really big difference. And he founded his friars, the community of friars, to pass on the same message into future generations where he wouldn't be. So I think it gives life purpose when you realize that no matter who you are or when you live, Christ came for you because he loves you. It gives you a kind of a game plan or a blueprint to follow in your life.
Ah, that is a beautiful, beautiful sentiment and a beautiful summation of why St. Francis matters. And I think perhaps why he's among the most popular of saints as we hear about them.
Yes, I agree.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. Mm-hmm. Well, you touched on this a little, but I'm interested more, of course, in writing these books. Finding out about people's childhood is so fascinating. So if you can tell us a little more about why you think that his childhood influenced his work.
Yes. It's interesting, too. I thought as a child, Francis was drawn to the beautiful. I think his mother she liked to sing her French songs, and she introduced him to poetry. And then he used to watch the troubadours that came through town, and he was very much attracted to that. Both to the work itself of the troubadour, the drawing in the audience and showing them what's beautiful, and even just the poetry itself. But he was also a very spoiled child. And I think that influenced him later in a kind of a rebound way. because he had everything he wanted, everything he asked for, always got his way, he realized later that that is not the way to happiness. And he rejected all that. And at some point, he was just in so much anguish. But then he realized that happiness was actually found without all that stuff, without having everything you want, but with actually giving up your will. So I thought it was ironic that this young man who had been pampered and indulged rejected all luxury, everything that money can buy, and instead sought happiness in complete and utter poverty.
Wow.
He was delighted whenever life was most difficult, and if he was cold or he was sick or he was tired and had no place to sleep, then he was really, really happy because he felt that that way he could share in the sufferings of Christ.
That's amazing. And we've heard that with a few characters in history, but not very many. So it definitely stands out.
Yes, yes.
Well, then you mentioned his mother briefly. So tell me, what other relationships you think fueled his life and moved him forward on this quest?
Well, I think Francis, like most of us, was influenced by his parents. His mother taught him about God and taught him about the importance of serving other people. And his father showed him, you know, how important it is to work hard and to get what you want, even though he didn't really pick up on that until later. There were those people, but Francis, I think, was interesting, maybe because he was such a big personality himself, that I didn't see any one person who really stood out as a guide to him as much as God himself. He had this kind of relationship with God when he was younger. I don't think he really saw it himself, but as he got older, it was a very special relationship that he had with God that I think motivated him to do the things that he eventually was known for.
That makes perfect sense. If you're going to have a calling, then the person who calls you is likely to be your mentor.
Exactly.
Oh, I love that. I love that. But also that his parents were part of his world and supported him in that way. That's beautiful.
Yes. Yeah, it was interesting, too. I don't know exactly his relationship with his bishop, but the man who was bishop when he was young, did help and advise him when he started to turn especially away from his selfish life. Then he went to the bishop to ask for advice on what to do next.
So he was a role model of
sorts. So there was that, an advisor.
Interesting, but he didn't necessarily need that if he was already on the path he wanted.
Yes, but you know, even though you know you want to serve God, it's still not always clear how you should do that. There's so many ways to do that.
Very true. Very true. And there's so many levels. That's very true.
Right.
Yeah. Well, then I have to ask you, what did you know or think about St. Francis before you came to this wonderful job of researching his life? You know, I would say mostly I knew he was a saint. I knew he was a saint of animals. I knew my son's school always had a day in his honor where we would bring in the cats and the guinea pigs and all of that.
Yes.
But I think that's where most people's knowledge ends. So I'm wondering where yours was at the time.
Yes. Well, similar. As a child, I heard little stories about St. Francis, you know, in my Catholic school. I remember the story of him taming the wolf of Gubbio, which I loved because I was a dog lover myself. And preaching to the birds, I always thought was a neat story. So I had the impression of a Francis that was a happy saint. And as a child, that was very appealing. In popular culture, too, people often think of him as the animal lover, like you said. And you see him in garden statues and burlesques, so I had that image, too.
Right.
But when I was an adult, it occurred to me this man is a saint, so there's probably more to his story. And so then I did a little bit of reading just on my own. This was before the idea of the book ever came about. But I read a little about him, and I realized how much power there was in his message, and that the little stories are helpful, but they're not the heart of his message, that there's so much depth to his message. And so that, even long ago, years ago, that appealed to me. It sort of addressed the adult me. So I saw that truth and virtue really matter to him, and that sin is real and something to be avoided at all costs, and that suffering has meaning. That seemed so, so important to me. So I'd have to say that my impression of St. Francis before researching his life had evolved over the years. I went from thinking he was a nice guy who loved animals and was happy to thinking that he was really profound and someone, you know, that you should admire and, you know, look into more. And I think when I started to research the book, I saw that was right. Both those things were right, but so much more. So much more to him.
I love the idea of the evolution of your understanding of him as you yourself grew.
Yes, because you need more as you get older, and you want to see more. So happily it was there to be seen.
I always say that's true with many books. If you read them when you're young and you get something out of them, then you read them at another stage in life and you get something else. And to me, that makes a book a classic.
Yes, exactly. So true.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. Well, then, in all this research and fun new stuff you were doing, I love to find out what was the new thing or what was your most interesting thing you discovered that wasn't part of the general story as most people had come to know it?
Yeah, okay. Well, I think the thing that I saw, I guess, in all the research that I did, no matter where I read, I saw this complete and perfect harmony between his life and his message after his conversion. But, you know, with a lot of people, you research their lives, they did a great thing, but they also have kind of a messy life here or there or
true.
Whatever, you know.
True.
No, we're not perfect, and he wasn't perfect either, but he was so, he so much wanted to be. That's just what drove him day in and day out, was to be the person he knew that God wanted him to be in everything he did. So that being totally all in, no lukewarmness, no hypocrisy, that was neat to discover. And then also, it was fun to realize that, I don't know if you remember the story about Christ telling Francis in person to rebuild my church.
Yes.
He says, sometimes you hear about that. I loved the fact that he was so eager, you know, to do that, but he misunderstood what Christ meant. And so he, you know, just stopped everything and started putting down plaster and patching, you know, walls and cleaning windows and stuff to rebuild the little church that he was in when Christ spoke to him. But it was a gradual process. Eventually he came to realize that God was asking him to use his zeal to rebuild the entire church composed of the hearts of believers everywhere, as if the souls or the members of the church were the bricks and the mortar that needed to be repaired and not just the physical building. So it was really fun to see that kind of progression in his own realization.
It's true. Isn't that funny? It's the
yes.
We always think small and we have to learn to think of the larger picture.
Yes, right, right. And how beautiful when he did. And it's not like the small things he did didn't matter. That was what first started attracting people to him. It was important. And in a way, he was doing the bigger work without realizing it at first. And then eventually he said, oh, I get this. I know what you're trying to say.
I love that. He recognized it.
And it was as
he himself was growing.
Right, right. And able to handle the message and do more.
I love that. I love that so much. So I have to ask you, what in your own background gave you this connection to be able to write about his life, to be interested enough to continue researching in this fashion?
When I was little, we had Franciscan religious teachers. And so when you were asking that question, I was remembering them and thinking that they really, I mean, they were effective and faithful, I guess, to the mission of St. Francis, because they reflected well that joy that St. Francis wanted to communicate. So this is when I was very young. But they left an impression of, you know, Franciscans are happy people. And that always appealed to me. And like all little girls probably, I loved animals. And I liked to see people who were happy while they were being good. I remember thinking that.
That's a great quote.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? Because, I don't know. When you're trying to sort things out in life, you don't always know which is the real path you're supposed to try to follow. But when you see that people are both happy and good, that's very striking, and it makes a difference. I think I said this already, but as I grew older, I was looking for more of the substance of the Catholic faith. And sometimes I'd come across a quotation that was from St. Francis, and that struck me as meaningful. And then when I looked further still, I was delighted to find that in his life and teaching, there was a very clear grasp of the reality of the Catholic faith and the meaning of the cross and the infinite mercy of God, all these things that are so important. So on a personal level and a faith level and an intellectual level, all that, I felt a connection to this saint.
I love that, because that's what an author needs, to really connect to someone and give us the, you know, the truest or the best version of their story.
Yes, right, yeah.
Great. And I think The answer to this next question is wrapped up in your title, sinner, servant, saint. But I'm looking always for the broad theme that you found through your character's life. You know, what could be the focus, the message that you're bringing out through telling this life?
Yes. It's such a neat question because this theme sort of dawned on me while I was working on this. It wasn't something I was looking for. Mm-hmm. I was just, you know, my aim was to learn all I could about this amazing man so that I could present it in an enjoyable way through my novel. I was calling my manuscript at that point, you know, at the beginning, I called it Herald of the Great King because that's how Francis described himself after his conversion, because he wanted to be God's messenger in the world. So I thought that was a good title. But as I studied and wrote about him, a theme did begin to surface. I began to see a thread running through his life that led him from sinner to sanctity. Sort of like the straw becoming gold, I think, under the magic touch of the mysterious little man Rumpelstiltskin.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yes, in that fairy tale. This thread or the theme that I began to see was the particular path to holiness that Francis took. And that's why I renamed my novel Sinner, Servant, Saint to indicate that theme, like you said.
Oh, I love that because it's a very, well, from a writing standpoint too, who doesn't like alliteration? So that's perfect.
Yes, yes, right, right.
But it definitely, it's as if you're seeing each block of this, of the step, each line of the ladder going up.
Yes, yes, but yet with a thread going through it all, it just all sort of folds into each other, you know, all the way up. It's just so neat.
Oh, I love that. Thank you, thank you. I realized I skipped over a question I always love to ask, so I'm going to make sure I go back to it, which is, being that this is a work of fiction, I always like to ask writers, what was your favorite scene? Because, of course, we don't have every detail of their lives down. So what did you, what scene did you write that really made you feel like it brought the story alive?
Some of the scenes required a lot of imagination. And the scene in the Church of San Damiano when the image of Christ comes to life was very challenging, but it was so moving. I just loved describing that, trying to put into words so that people could experience something of what it must have been like to be Francis at that point. And I know it's not perfect, but I remember, you know, I was remembering Saint Bernadette of Lourdes being so frustrated. I read this with the statues that people were trying to make of Our Lady of Lourdes while she was still alive.
Right.
What did she look like, you know? And so she'd describe it, and then they'd make a statue, and she'd say, no, that's not it. And also I heard that about St. Faustina and the Divine Mercy picture that we see a lot.
Really?
That she was not satisfied. But I just think human beings and human material can't recreate something divine. Exactly, you know, you can give an impression, but it's not the thing. It's never going to be the thing itself. But that's what I was trying to do anyway, as closely as possible.
I love that, though. I love bringing in the stories of these other people and trying to make sense of them.
Yes, yeah. So I loved doing it because you had to put yourself there and imagine what it must have been like and then try to put it into words. So that was fun. But I also enjoyed, in a different way, describing Francis's parents, Pietro and Lady Pica, because there's not a lot of information about them. There's some outstanding stories from the early years when he was troubled. But once his father disowned him, after that, there's really nothing. According to what I've read, there's only one reference that Francis himself makes to his father afterwards. So I had to make up a lot of what went on in their minds afterwards, once they realized what their son had become. But, you know, trying to be consistent with what we knew about them, what it might have been like. And that was fun, just as a writer.
Sure, and as I'm sure as a parent, thinking about what you would feel like if your child walked this path.
Right, right. So not just what we know about them, but what we know about life itself.
True, and the hard job of parenting.
Yes, right.
Oh, I love that. That's beautiful. Well, because Mentors Project is so wrapped up in the concept of mentors and hoping these books will help young people find new mentors in their life, I always like to ask, you know, we mentioned the bishop a little bit. We mentioned his parents.
Yes.
Who do you think, did he have a human mentor in the world?
Yes, yes. So he learned a great deal from his parents, I think, by, you know, their example and what they loved and what was important to them. I think he learned from that. There was one interesting kind of mysterious mentor that turns up in Francis's life when he's a young adult. It comes at a time when he is pretty much in despair. He doesn't see any importance in life, any reason why he should be here. He doesn't know what he's doing. He's failed at everything. And then this man turns up, and in what I've read, that he has no name. The name is never mentioned. So I called him Giordano in my book because, to me, that suggests the idea of guardian angel, because he just turns up when Francis needs him. He stayed close to him. He listened to Francis work things out. I don't know what he said to him, but they spent hours conversing and being together. And at the end of that time, Francis begins to settle down and to see meaning in his life and decides to change his life for the better.
Then clearly that is the work of a mentor.
Yes, exactly. So you see the results of it. You know he's there, but you don't know what he said to him. But clearly that was an important person in his life. After that, his friend disappears from all historical accounts that I can find. Ah. So it's very interesting.
Very interesting. Very, in the creative vein, who was that and why did he come for that small period of time?
Right. So interesting. I do think it's a sign, whatever about, who he was, that God is looking after us at every moment of our lives. And I think that's one of the things that Francis came to realize at that time in his life, that he had never been alone, that God was always guiding him and pulling him along, even when it wasn't going the way he wanted to go.
And I've often heard from many different cultures that there's a concept that when you need help, people will show up in your life to offer it if you're open to listening.
Yes, so true. And I think that's a good example of that.
Oh, I do. That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Well, on the flip side, of course, the question is, outside of the whole world, is there any individual, anyone particularly that we feel that St. Francis mentored?
Yeah, well, the whole world is really what I come up with there. I mean, he mentored hundreds of thousands of people, starting with his friends. I think it's interesting because his brother never joined him. And never seemed to, ever click with him or cooperate with him again after he was disowned by his father.
Wow.
And not his parents, as far as we can tell, though, his mother was always sympathetic, so I'm sure in her heart she was following him.
True, but obviously she probably didn't have the kind of power we would like her to have had to make further choices, perhaps, right?
Yeah, it seemed like it was a pretty rough situation for her. So he was a mentor to thousands of people, beginning with his closest friends who decided to follow him. And then really it seemed like everyone he encountered was affected by him, whether they wanted to like him or not.
That's the trick right there.
Yes. Even the visit with the Sultan of Egypt was interesting because first of all, everyone was saying, don't go there. They give a prize for the head of a Christian. But he wanted to go there. He wanted to talk to the Sultan, and he did. I don't know. I guess it's just a gift of God, but he got to present the whole message of Christ to the Sultan, and eventually the Sultan let him go. Wow. According to the stories, he let him go with a little token of his protection so that he could travel. So he obviously had an effect on the Sultan. Didn't ask for his head.
Have to convert him, but made him think, gave him some new information.
Yes.
That's beautiful.
Right. Yep.
That's the job.
Right, exactly.
Ah, wonderful. Well, this has been so much fun discussing the book. I'm really excited about it being out there in the world. I always end these interviews by the mentor's question, who now, of course, is, who was your mentor?
Well, I've had so many mentors in my life. I don't even know where to begin, except with my parents, because my parents have been with me through everything, guiding me. Always, even now in these crazy times, I always appreciate their take on things, their clear-sightedness, giving perspective to things because of their long experience of life. And then other than that, I've been blessed with good teachers all along, my own family, my own children are great mentors to me now that they're growing into adulthood.
I love that.
So much from them. Yes. Oh, my goodness. You learn so much from your kids because you're so involved in their thoughts and hearts, and you see so much good and things ways you can be better yourself.
I think that's the most beautiful answer. I don't know that many people have ever answered their children, and I think that is so true. And again, it's like the guardian angel. It's being open to that information.
Yes, recognizing it. Yeah, that's true.
Well, thank you for offering that up. I appreciate it. And this has been a lovely time chatting. I wish you well with the book, and I hope that we speak again soon.
Thank you, Roseanne. It's been fun.
Thanks for listening to the Mentors Podcast, sponsored by the Barbera Foundation, whose mission is to promote positive change by inspiring others to engage in their community. Your host has been Dr. Roseanne Welch. Our music was composed by Patrick Abate, technical direction by Douglas E. Welch, and Kathleen Childress designed our website. For more information and to read more about the great mentors in history, visit mentorsproject.org and join us for our next conversation.